All right.
Did you just end the recording and start the recording to say all right?
Yeah. Hello. This is Joyce.
This is awful, but I'm Michael. We're off to a terrible start.
Why was that terrible?
No, it's great. This is great. This is great. That's Joyce. I'm Michael. And this is...
Why didn't you like my intro?
No, it was a great intro. That's the best intro we've ever done.
But you stopped and said it was bad.
No, it's just...
You broke the flow.
No, this is the flow. We're the Gratitude Collector. Hello, everyone. I'm Michael. That's Joyce. This is the Gratitude Collision. And today, we are going to be talking about shame.
Sorry, come again?
Shame.
What was that?
You can't hear me? Shame? Can I say that too softly?
Shame? No, I just wanted to make you say it again.
Oh, goodness. Well, yes, we are going to be talking about shame. And to start this episode off, Joyce, this is an episode that you wanted to discuss. We call these types of episodes Joyce's Choices. Just Joyce's Choice. But you wanted to talk about it, so I feel like to get things started, it would be beneficial for both of us if you gave me and our listeners out there a better understanding of how you define shame.
Yeah, so...
Just off the top. Off the top. No rhetoric. You're on the spot. I ask you for shame. What does that mean to you? I need a definition.
I would say that shame is that layer of insecurity that in some ways prevents you from seeing the reality of who you are and what you do, which probably needs to be unpacked a little bit. But that's what I recognize it as. Like, you take an action that you perceive as a failure and you make it very personal about who you are as a person instead of it just being, you know, something that you did. You make the action your identity. Mm-hmm. So in general, that would be kind of my definition of shame. It's definitely been influenced by a lot of different things I've read. And so I wouldn't say that's a true instinctual reflection of shame. But what about you? I don't think you've read any works about shame or anything like that. So maybe you're a little more fresh about what shame is to you.
Yeah, so I've never read a modern author, I would say, and had my perception of shame defined by them. But because it's not something that I generally feel, in fact, I'm not even sure if I've ever felt it before for whatever reason, I have to consult works or the ways that I've seen it manifest in everyday life. Because I can't dive into how I felt or a moment when I felt shame, because I literally cannot think of a single moment. And I've gone over this for weeks just trying to find a single moment. So when I think about shame, I actually think about the Bible. And I know, well, you were raised in church, right, Joyce?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, got you. Well, not everyone was. And so that may not be the first thing that people think of, but I just think back to Adam and Eve, and they were ashamed of their own nakedness. And so I just kind of, in order to find a definition of shame for myself, I, as I mentioned, have to look at what the Bible or texts say about it, and then as well, I'm sorry, also what other people do in response to what I believe is shame. And so for me, I was thinking about it right before we got in the closet, and I wrote down this definition, and I said, it's an overwhelming sense of and attachment to feelings of insignificance and inferiority. So one more time, it's an overwhelming sense of, and then also it's an attachment to these feelings of insignificance and inferiority. And the reason I said, or added in the attachment to piece, it's because, as you mentioned, when something goes poorly or doesn't go the way that you thought it would, like, oh my gosh, I didn't achieve whatever it was to the level that I had hoped, people are attaching their identity to that feeling of inferiority. So it's not even like feeling inferior, because I could be competing against someone and recognize, oh my gosh, they're better than me. But it's this attachment of my identity to that feeling of inferiority that gets you to shame. And then I also wrote down some notes. I said it's this primal feeling that presses to override healthy beliefs, and it claws at the pillars of community. And the reason I included those things in there was just because when you feel shame, it's one of these, as I mentioned, primal feelings that in my mind overrides things that you know. Like, it doesn't matter how strong a relationship is. It doesn't matter if you know your parents love you. It doesn't matter if you've been friends with X person for 15 years. Shame is one of those feelings that as soon as you feel it, all logical reasoning, I'm not going to say it goes out of the window, but there's this pull to invalidate those things. It overrides them. So that's how I would define it. But as I mentioned, it's very hard for me to instinctually define it. I really have to think about it because shame is not something that I feel. Now, we can get into that later. But since this is your episode, A Joyce's Choice, I want to dive into, you mentioned, I don't know if you said Brené Brown specifically, but I know in the past you've mentioned her. That's an author that has been, or rather played a really big role in your life and your understanding of shame. So can you touch on that for a little bit?
Yeah, definitely. So Brené Brown has definitely influenced my perspective of what shame is. So to talk a little bit about her, she is a researcher at the University of Houston, and she spent the last 10 years studying vulnerability, courage, worthiness, and shame. And she's known for this TEDx talk that just blew up in 2010. And yeah, so basically she defines shame to be the intensely painful feeling or experience of believing we are flawed and therefore unworthy of love and belonging. And basically sums that up as the fear of disconnection. So in general, because there's a fear of disconnection, she says that the healing, the way to heal shame is empathy. Because shame is a social concept, it happens between people. So it also heals best between people. So this along with self-compassion is what she says would heal shame. The reason we wanted to talk about shame to begin with is mostly because of a conversation that we had a few weeks ago.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, if you want to expand on that.
I'd love to expand if you stop shining this light in my eyes.
It's hard to see.
It's so alarming. So I don't remember the specific conversation. I've got a couple of guesses, but me and Joyce were talking, and this was definitely not the most lighthearted conversation we've ever had. It was one where emotions were definitely flaring up, at least on one of our ends. And by that, I mean my guys. I'm not insinuating what I'm saying.
You're so annoying.
But Joyce said something that really stood out to me. And she, I don't remember what the exact wording was, so please forgive me on that. But she said something like, your lack of empathy is astounding. Or your lack of empathy is baffling. It was something like that. And it was just boom, like shot in the dark. You lack empathy and it's actually just astounding. And I had this moment where I'm like, wait, what? It's definitely possible that the way that I live my life differs from the way that I believe that I'm living my life. I think all of us at different moments in life will realize like, oh my gosh, I'm not as patient as I thought I was. I'm not as compassionate as I thought I was. I'm not as fast as I thought I was. I'm not as enter anything as I thought I was. But I had this moment where I was like, wait, do I actually just lack empathy? If empathy requires that you feel, like really truly feel and take on that feeling that somebody else has, could I ever even be empathetic in the first place if I've never experienced what she's experienced, if I'm not feeling the sense of rejection and insecurity, shame that she feels? Is empathy something that I should even be striving for? And I don't want to get off topic here. That's something that we can address in a further issue, but that conversation and those thoughts are what led me and us to this topic of shame. And so from your end, Joyce, where were you?
Yeah, so the reason I said that was mostly because of what Brené Brown had written about shame. This idea that I reiterated earlier is that empathy heals shame. And so recognizing in that moment that, oh my gosh, if Michael is saying that he's never experienced shame before, that would make a lot of sense as to maybe why he's not very sensitive around shame. Because first of all, he's not able to recognize when I am experiencing shame. So maybe he treats that conversation normally when really all I'm looking for is empathy and understanding in that context. So that was kind of my thought process.
Also, I think you were just pissed, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely was.
I mean, I wasn't happy either. Like, let's be real. I'm not going to be sitting here like, oh, I was perfectly fine. I was so annoyed with you. Oh, my gosh. Because you were in a place where you were just like, it felt like you were just firing off this place, tangent, boom, 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 almost expecting me to be able to recognize shame. Mm-hmm. And then you gave me something in vulnerability and said something to the extent of like, yo, I just told you what shame looks like. How would you not know that, like, X, Y, and Z. Like, how would you not know that, like, I'm expressing shame to you again? And I'm like, Joyce, what are you talking? Like, you 5 minutes ago, you, like, this was all over text, by the way, guys. So we were communicating via Messenger type of app. And I remember sitting there like, dude, I just got from you the code on shame 5 minutes ago, or what it looked like in that specific instance. How could I just recognize via text every time that you are in a place of shame? Like, how is that even possible? And so on your end, I think you felt like, and correct me if I'm wrong, yo, is this guy even capable of recognizing shame? And you probably didn't feel that way, because I was sitting there like, how could I recognize shame? And so then, a little further in the conversation, you asked me, dude, is shame even something that you feel? Is shame even something that you recognize?
Was that the progression?
Mm-hmm. As I remember it.
The empathy first, and then shame came later.
Exactly. Because we started diving into it, because I remember calling you out and being like, dude, you literally told me 5 minutes ago what shame looked like. How could I possibly know that this time you're talking about shame? And so that was how we got into the, is shame something that you can even feel or recognize in the first place? Because I was definitely feeling the same thing on the other side of the coin. You're sitting there like, dude, this guy doesn't recognize shame, probably. And I'm sitting there like, how could I recognize shame? Like, I just got the code literally 3 minutes ago.
Yeah.
And then shame is not something that I feel. And guys, that's not me being like, oh, I'm so healthy, I'm awesome, I'm over here, and you guys are insecure. No. Yo, I got my own issues, got my own insecurity. I just do not know what shame feels like, whether that is due to my parents and their incredible upbringing, incredible siblings, the people that my parents surrounded us, the schools, like whatever it was, my brain is not wired to lead to shame. Like on any level, it just does not go there. I do not know what it feels like to feel shame specifically. And so then Joyce, you're like, oh, well, that makes sense that you wouldn't be able to be like empathetic if you have never felt this. And it sounded like you were under the impression that in order to be empathetic, you do have to share that same feeling that the person has. And so if I had never felt shame, then it sounded like you were thinking he could never be empathetic towards me or recognize it because he doesn't know what it feels like. Does that sound about right?
Yeah. I would say that my view has probably shifted since that conversation.
And why is that?
Well, for one, I'm not angry about it anymore. But I would say in general, it's a lot more of a collaborative approach of realizing that, hey, if you've never experienced shame before, then maybe even having this conversation is helpful for you. Mm-hmm. And realizing that if we have a shared vocabulary, a shared structure of defining shame, recognizing shame, then that's something that we can both improve in. I can talk about it more, which Brené Brown says is really helpful for developing shame resilience, is to name it. Because shame doesn't like being talked about.
Being pulled into the light, being examined. Yeah.
Yeah. So being able to talk about it and recognizing that if I'm in that place, sometimes all I need is that empathy and that understanding, because it's a hard place to be in. And I think that's where the resentment came from, because I was thinking, oh, he doesn't understand that in this place, I'm really just struggling. And so he's going to see it as a weakness that I'm asking for some sort of, I don't know, kindness or empathy. It kind of counterbalances with our previous conversations about self-sufficiency and whose responsibility is it? Because, and there was shame about that.
Right.
That I was asking you to help me out in that place of shame. But then when I read her definition and it says that, no, it makes sense that shame is healed between people, I almost felt justified being like, oh my gosh, I felt bad all this time. I felt ashamed for asking for help or asking for a specific response. And I recognize that could be a slippery slope. That's can be dangerous, because how do you perceive empathy, and does that person express, do they have to express empathy in that way for you to perceive it as such? So there's obviously things like that. But in general, I just felt really, I guess, inspired or just motivated or validated per se that she said, no, shame can be healed between people. And it's not just a personal individual journey. It's not just, oh, how much can you love yourself? But it's also how much love are you receiving from other people?
So you mentioned a couple of things. You said you're no longer in that place because you're no longer mad about it. What is it? What was the it?
I think I kind of touched on it, just the resentment that, or the frustration that I felt like you couldn't understand where I was coming from. And because of that, maybe you were judging me for being weaker, per se, to be ashamed and then to ask for help. But really, that was all in my head.
Right.
Right.
Being driven by shame.
Mm-hmm.
And on the flip side of that, well, first of all, thank you for sharing that. On the flip side of that, so I had a couple thoughts. So you mentioned that there was this feeling of frustration in that moment that I couldn't understand. But what's important to note is that not being able to in this moment understand does not mean not in the future being able to understand. And also in this present moment, not being able to understand also does not mean not wanting to understand.
Mm-hmm.
Because I do want to understand. But the fact remains that how could I understand? Because this is not a piece of my identity. And so then you also mentioned, you said this, you mentioned the word asking. I was asking for this. And I do truly believe that in that moment you were asking for it. But to me, it sounds like you are expecting it.
Mm-hmm.
And asking versus expecting are two very different words with two very serious different levels of ramifications. Because I'm sitting there feeling like, yo, you expect me to just recognize and step into something that I literally do not understand.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how could you step into a calculus class and just understand calculus if you've never been taught? If you've never understood, like, the building blocks, where it comes from, how to recognize all these different things. And this is just, like, on the spot. But to your point, I recognize that you are in this place. And as your friend, I wouldn't want you to stay in that place. But still, I'm in this place of my own where I'm like, I don't feel judged, I want to say, but it's almost like, for lack of a better word, like I'm feeling judged almost, not for being healthy, but for not being able to understand. But the reason I don't understand is because my mind doesn't work that way. Because it has like healthy, I guess, mechanisms in place to prevent me from naturally being able to recognize those things. And I also think there was something that was just lost in translation because we're messaging. Because when we're talking in person, you can tell immediately when someone's voice goes softer when they're asking, you know, you can just recognize those things. So for the people out there, I just think it's important if you are currently in a place of, I don't know, frustration with a spouse or a significant other, just recognize that just because you may feel like right now they don't understand, it doesn't mean that, first of all, they won't be able to understand if you can bring them into your world. And then secondly, that they're not trying. So if you take those things into account, I think already, boom, a lot of relationships can work towards healing.
One thing that you just said that was really insightful to me was that it was an expectation, even though in the moment I thought I was asking.
Right.
Because if I was asking, I wouldn't be resentful if you are unable to or you even refuse to. But because I had the expectation, that breeds that resentment that shows to me, I was like, oh, wow, I guess I did expect him to know. Because in some ways, I was using myself as a baseline. Like, oh, it's so easy for me to recognize shame. So why can't he?
Right. But so not even, I know you're not putting yourself down right now, but to highlight something that you did do, and I don't know if you remember this specific piece of the conversation. I recognized, yes, there's this expectation being placed on me that feels so unfair. But a moment came in the conversation when you said, I can't remember, oh my gosh, I wish I could remember exactly what you said. But basically, you said what you said, and then you said, like, I'm asking you. You let me know. You said, this is me being vulnerable. You let me know, hey, this is me being vulnerable. This is me being, like, open as forward as possible. This is how I feel. I don't want to be here. Here you go. And I remember saying, I can work with this. That's what I said to you. I was like, yes, I can work with this. Because now I know. Like, now I know. Oh my gosh, thank you so much for letting me know. Like, oh, you're being vulnerable. Like, rather than just, like, spewing off the first thing that comes to mind,
mm-hmm.
You let me know, hey, I am being vulnerable. I'm giving this to you. I'm trusting you with this. And I was like, oh my gosh. And I literally wrote, I can work with this. I can do this. I can work with this. And it's so much of it is just, I just don't know. I just didn't recognize it.
Yeah, it was a weird combination because I remember that moment in terms of the emotions I was feeling. There was a piece of me that wanted to be vulnerable and to share that to share what I was actually feeling. And, you know, Brené Brown says that one of the elements of shame resilience is to ask for what you need and to speak about that shame, right? So I was trying to do that, but I was also really angry. So it came out almost resentfully. So it was a mixed bag. I think there were mixed emotions there where I was like, I'm trying to be vulnerable.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
so
yeah.
Angry,
yeah.
But also trying to bring it out into the light and talk about it and have a productive discussion. So it was kind of those both sides, the one side that's been conditioned over years to defend myself that way, to, you know, protect myself. And then the other side that's wanting to grow, wanting to learn, trying to bridge that gap. And trying to grow in a productive way. So, yeah, it was very clear that there were two sides that were kind of conflicting there.
Absolutely. And I think we were both on the same page and we're both like, oh my gosh, we recognize there's a better way to do this, but we're frustrated and we're just trying to figure this thing out. I remember at the end of the conversation, I gave this analogy because I was just thinking through it. And I'm like, what is going on? Because that line, just like your lack of empathy is astounding. Just like, what? Am I really, do I really just lack empathy? It was literally just, like, I don't want to say it was eating me up because it's not an insecurity of mine. So it wasn't just tearing at me. I was really just trying to figure out, is empathy something that I can actually strive for? If it requires that I feel what she feels and I don't feel what she feels, is it even possible for me to be empathetic in this moment? But I thought about it, and I'm not saying this is the right way to approach it, but the other side, to play devil's advocate, is I messaged Joyce and I was like, yo, if a hammer does not perform the functions of a screwdriver and you get mad at the hammer for not being able to do that, that's actually crazy. Like that to me feels like the crazy thing. The hammer was built and is wired to do a certain thing. And it could possibly kind of do the job of a screwdriver, but it wasn't designed to do that. And the screwdriver was not designed to perform the functions of a hammer. So to be frustrated with the hammer or the screwdriver for not being able to recognize or achieve to the same degree of efficiency the capabilities of the other, that actually feels to me like the crazy thing. So you're saying I lack empathy, but I was actually designed a different way. I was designed with a logical mind to problem solve. And so to ask me to feel on the level that you want me to feel, because that's what empathy means to you, to me, that feels crazy. And are there different ways I can show empathy? And boom, we can dive into that, you know, later episode. But yeah, that's where we're at. And that's how the conversation came about. But
so I think it's funny because I hear you, what you're saying right now, but if you want to hear what I heard through the filter.
I do want to hear.
The filter is, one, you're saying you're crazy.
Right.
And two, you're saying I'm a hammer and I cannot change.
Right. Which is actually not what I'm saying to either of those things. But that's so interesting. So this is super, super interesting. And a matter of fact, I think this is a good time to just play a game. Because what I was saying was neither of those things. I'm not saying, yo, I'm locked in as being a hammer, because obviously human life is capable of blooming and flourishing in infinite ways over a hammer. And then secondly, I'm not calling you crazy. What do you mean? I'm saying this mindset of expecting people almost naively, without thought, to be something that they are currently not, or to understand your life the way you do, even though they didn't live the life that you lived, that almost seems wild. And I'm almost to the point where I'm judging myself, where I wasn't judging myself, but questioning myself almost with not a vindictive mindset, but like, yo, why can't you be more patient? Why can't you be more compassionate? Do you lack empathy?
I was gaslighting you.
Would you not? You're trying to. But I'm asking myself these things, and I just came to the conclusion it actually could be argued to be more unfair of somebody to ask of you something that you are not, or currently not. Not to say that you can't be that, but you're currently not. And so I think this is a good reflective moment for everyone listening. Yo, like, when was the last time that you didn't see eye to eye with somebody? What were you asking? Were you asking or were you expecting them to understand, to provide you the same emotional comfort that you're looking for when they lived a different life?
Yeah, you said we were going
to
play a game. And
back to the point. Oh, yeah, yeah. So,
this, the game.
So, yeah, yeah. So, thank you for keeping me back on track. Great, great point. Yeah, so let's play the game. So Joyce just mentioned, this is what I heard, and I just explained, this is what I said, and this is what I meant when I said it. So let's play a game. We're going to just picture everyday life, situations that we either have been through or have not been through, maybe just common experiences, and we'll try to sync up what you feel or how you would feel based off of your shame filters versus how I would interpret this situation. So both of us were new to Ultimate Frisbee, had never thrown a Frisbee before, maybe you had, but let's say you go out and you throw with the guys and your throws are trash, automatic, default mindset. What would you be feeling? What would you be having to war with and grind away at? What would be pushing on your conscience?
I'm not actually sure that's a good example because...
We can start light.
Yeah, with Ultimate Frisbee, a shame mindset would be, oh wow, I toss so badly, like I'm such a shit player and I should probably not try. You know, like I am a huge burden on this team and I don't want to keep them from winning, et cetera, et cetera. And so I'm just going to sit out. So that would be the shame mindset.
Is that something that you felt?
To some degree, but I recognized it wasn't that high stakes, so...
So the stakes...
Right.
play a huge role.
Yeah, if there were really high stakes in it, then I would be a lot more timid. But I don't know if that's a shame thing. That's a timidity thing.
Right, right.
Because I don't feel like a worse person per se. But there's, you know, shame, it can find its way into a lot of different things. So maybe I don't feel ashamed about throwing badly, but I feel ashamed that I didn't push myself.
I see.
Or, you know, I'm like, hey, that guy is trying so hard and he's pushing himself to grow. Then why can't I do that? Like, why am I so useless? Why am I, you know, so easily discouraged? So I'm like berating myself in my own head and saying, you know, you should be better. You should be trying harder. And so it's not really in that sense. It's like almost another layer.
Yeah, it's almost like you start with the action. The action did not meet my standards. Therefore, I feel all of these things. But then the shame kicks in and it gets mad at you and it judges you for feeling those things. Why do you feel so bad? Why can't you just pick yourself up? Why are you always down on yourself? Why are you? And it starts attacking the mindset.
Yeah.
Which is one level separated from what even sparked it in the first place. Whereas for me, to give some contrast, yo, I went out there every single day and I was throwing poorly. But the first thing I did was I let them know, hey, I've never played before. Basically, if you'll help me, if you'll train with me, if you'll work with me, yo, I can get this. Then celebrating all the good things that I did, all the good throws. Yo, I think I made progress. Yo, I think I figured it out. Talking them through my mindset so they're not just sitting there like, yo, he's just bad and he's not getting it. I'm literally showing them, giving them insight into my mind. Hey, I'm going to try this. I'm going to try this. I'm going to try this. And bringing them into that process. And then thirdly, every time there's a bad throw, it's my identity is not in that throw. My identity is not crashing onto the ground as the frisbee crashes onto the ground. Regardless of whether the frisbee gets to where I wanted it to or hits the ground, my identity stays exactly rooted in who I am and what I stand for. Yo, I'm learning. I'm growing. I'm trying. Yo, I'm with a community of guys. We're getting better together. Yo, the next one's going to be better. Dude, the last time I couldn't even make it 5 yards, I just made it 6. Like celebrating every single victory along the way, my brain just doesn't get locked into that was bad. It is an objective that did not go where I wanted it to go, and I remembered what I did with my body. So I'm going to change something. It's never just a stuck in place dead end. It's a simple realization that was not what I was going for. Let's change something different. And it makes the process exciting. So if all these different, I want to just call them like mental mechanisms that, to be honest, I don't, well, sometimes I do have to consciously will them into existence, but for the most part, they just happen. They just do that. I feel at certain moments like this pull towards negativity. Once again, it's never my identity wrapped in that negativity. But when I recognize like, oh my gosh, my mind just went there like, oh, we're bad or whatever. Then I consciously will rein it back in. But I think where I differ is that my identity is never wrapped in the throw itself. It's never wrapped in the flight of the frisbee. It's never wrapped in whether or not we won. It's not wrapped in whether or not the guy caught the frisbee that I threw. It's just grounded in who I am. But let's move on to a different example then.
I want to touch on that for a second, because I think it's a really good illustration of, I guess, the different responses when you feel shame versus not.
Okay.
So if you feel shame, a lot of the times that pulls you into yourself, and it leads you to a stance of defensiveness to protect that ego. Because if your worth isn't throwing the frisbee or trying hard to be a person that, you know, keeps trying and is persistent, all these things, then if your identity is in that, then it's like you're trying to protect that image of yourself. And so there's almost an aspect of denial in that. Whereas if you don't have shame, it goes towards growth and improvement because your identity is not tied into it. The stakes aren't high. So in some ways, it's this kind of shame versus guilt dichotomy, which Brené Brown, she defines guilt as I did something bad and shame is I am bad.
But and even then I'm wondering what the difference is, because if I go back to the frisbee example or baseball throw, whatever it is, I can recognize that was bad based off of where I wanted it to go, based off of what the expectation is. If I'm playing shortstop, somebody hits it, I get it, and I'm supposed to get it to first, and I overthrow. I recognize based off of what was needed, that was bad. I did something bad, but still I don't feel guilty.
See, I don't always think that it's attached to an emotion, though. I think guilt, in some ways, is just recognizing that you did something bad, and you're removing that action from your identity.
But I feel like guilt does require an emotion. Because what I'm describing is an objective based off of the standards that was bad. And I was the one who did it. but there's not this feeling of like, I'm trash associated with it.
Right. And that would be a shame perspective, saying that I am bad.
Right, right.
Me as an individual.
Right.
I'm bad now because I threw badly.
Right, 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 right. So I would postulate. So I know that I am capable of feeling guilt, and I'm confident I'm capable of feeling shame. I do not know consciously what it's like to feel shame. Guilt, I think, is an easier thing, easier emotion for me to reach, because it's closer to the conscious level, I think. Meaning, the level that I was telling you about where I recognize, oh, I just had a negative thought, and then consciously pulling it away, I think guilt lies closer to that level, mm-hmm. where shame is six levels buried with all these different intertwined emotions of, oh, I'm embarrassed, and my pride and this, and my ego is hurt and this, and there are all these different intertwining things that lead you to that deep level.
Yeah.
I think guilt is much closer to the surface where it's like, oh, I did something bad, dang mm-hmm. it. Mm-hmm. And if you just slip like a half click down, you can reach guilt. But that's all closer to the conscious level, where shame takes like way more unpackaging, because it bypasses everything else. All those conscious thoughts, shame is one of those things, as I mentioned, those primal pulls that just like drags you 6 feet under. And then you get there, but you only know that you're there once you're there.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if you recognize it earlier, I think you're closer to the guilt level. But yeah, in general, it just, man, there's so many moments in my life where I see friends like playing basketball, they miss a shot, or throw a frisbee, it's trash, like whatever. They're like, oh my gosh, I'm trash. I should give up. Why am I even doing this? And I'm taking my name off the list. And I'm like, what are you talking about? We are here for fun.
Mm-hmm.
This is chill. We are with a group of people who love, support, encourage, want to be around us. And your mind is wrapped up in that? Do you even know you're doing that? Like, genuinely, I wonder, do you even know? Like, do you even know that you are rewriting the world? And what you are seeing right now, oh, these people are looking at me and they're probably judging me because I just, like, everything that you're probably seeing and letting in right now is wrong. It's wrong because I don't view you that way. Yo, we started playing together. Like, we're both learning. We're both growing. Yeah, but you just learned so quickly, Michael, and you're just fast learning, and then I just feel like I'm the... Bro, what? Why are you comparing our lives? I started playing sports when I was 4. Like, we shouldn't be learning at the same rate. Like, it's fine.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, yo, you good? Like, I mean, you're not, but do you know you're not? That's what scares me the most. Truly, that is the thing that scares me the most about shame. It's just this thought that shame is sneaky, and it will drag you there without you knowing that you're there.
Yeah.
Without you knowing that you're slipping there. And you're gonna be lashing out and clawing and like fighting to like get a grasp of and hurting people along the way. But you don't know that you're doing that until you're at the bottom of the pit. That's the craziest thing.
Yeah.
That's just what blows my mind.
And I really like how Brown puts it. She calls them shame gremlins because it kind of gives this imagery of like they're just hiding and they don't want to be talked about, brought into the light.
Mm-hmm.
And so... Yeah, that's exactly what I'm picturing when you say that of, and I think that's why it's so important for us to talk about it and for people to start talking about it, because creating that vocabulary around it and the structure to say, hey, you know, this is what shame is. This is what it looks like. This is how we can grow towards more empathy. I guess another situation that I was thinking about is when Michael and I went to Austin. And I lost my keys down there. And we were planning on driving home the next morning to Dallas. And we lost my keys.
We both had obligations the following morning.
Yeah.
Tight schedule.
So, yeah, we were planning on heading out at like 5, 6 a.m.
Yep.
So that we could be out of there back in Dallas. And because we couldn't find the keys, it kind of threw the whole schedule off. And so in that...
She said things so nicely. It kind of threw the whole... No. It threw the schedule off. We literally missed all of our obligations, and there were people depending on us.
Right. Right. And...
No judgment in that, by the way.
Yeah. And so, for me, I didn't realize it in the moment, but afterwards I recognized my response as shame, because, let's see, basically what happened was I lost the keys and kind of just withdrew. I went into this shell, and... So on the outside, it probably looks like, I don't know what it looks like, but like, oh, she's shut down. Oh, maybe she's being selfish in some ways because she's asking me to call the Uber driver or call the restaurant where she may have left the keys. But inside, it's really because I'm fighting this torrent of angry, mean things that I'm saying to myself. Like, how could you lose the keys? How could you be so stupid? And everybody's trying to help you, and you're such a burden. And it's all of these core lies that have come back to me throughout my life, just kind of berating me. And so that's really why I kind of shut down. And so on the outside, my actions don't show what I'm actually feeling, which is that I feel very bad. And so I asked Michael, I was like, hey, is everything going to be okay for tomorrow? And he was kind of just like, don't worry about it. And so I felt really bad, but I just didn't know how to manifest it in a helpful way, because it just immobilized me. And I think that's pretty characteristic of shame in general. It makes you shut down and it prevents you from taking helpful, productive action. So for you, Michael, if you had not been shut down by shame and you were in my situation, losing the keys, and you were the one who drove us down, how would you have responded?
Yeah, that's an awesome question. So before I answer that, let me just go back to what it was like on my end. So shame, as I mentioned, if I were to define it, right at the beginning of the episode, I said it claws at the pillars of community. It claws at the pillars of community. It claws at the pillars of community. What does that mean? What I mean by that is it pulls you into isolation, period. It is an immediate pull into isolation. And so we get back to the house that we were staying at, and Joyce is like, yo, I can't find my keys. And we're like, oh, you're joking, right?
Yeah, it started off lighthearted.
Definitely, this was planned, down to the minutes.
I'm sure it's somewhere around here.
And we're
here.
It's totally fine. And I'm just like pulling out my sleeping bag, like, it's going to be fine. We're going to catch the keys. And it's like, no. Like, actually, like, I can't find my keys. So I'm like, okay, we got to find the keys. So everyone is helping her. Your friend wasn't there at the time, but yeah. And as soon as the situation starts, like, we're looking and the keys are just not turning up, and it's almost like with every single spot that we check and the keys are not there is a 5% increase in lack of interaction from Joyce. Like, a 5% increase in shutdown. Check the couch. Not there. Boom. 95% capacity. Check the restroom. Not there. Boom. 90% capacity. Check under, boom, 5%, 85%, 70%. And the more we check, it's almost like the increments get bigger and bigger and bigger, to the point where, like, literally, there's nothing. Like you're laying on the couch. And I felt so bad for you because I recognized, yo, the level of, I don't want to say depravity, that's the wrong word, but, like, the depths that you're in right now is horrible. I know that. Like, we've gone back and forth, understand where your brain probably is right now. And so for me, compassion in that moment was literally just, like, not leaking out, like, my frustration that I felt, because I was so exhausted, which I let you know as soon as you picked me up from the airport. So I had flown in, guys. I had flown into Austin. I, the prior 2 days had been at a conference in, I want to say, Philadelphia, representing the organization that we work for. So I was just exhausted. We get there, meaning I get to Austin and she picks me up, and I let her know, like, yo, I'm really tired. So, like, I refuse to lash out, but, like, my capacity to extend compassion is a little bit limited. Like, it's a little bit limited. If you need me, I will be there. But, like, yo, I just, my stores are depleted. And so in that moment, I was just like, yo, she has shut down, like a complete and utter shutdown. And you said that you were fighting this torrent of angry, mean things that you were saying to yourself. And I wonder how many of those things was Michael's thinking this, or these other people are thinking this, these things about me. And it actually was none of that. I was so focused in, like, just do not leak out your frustration. Be kind, be encouraging, help her look for the keys. Just literally do not even hint that you are inconvenienced by this, because this is not about you. This is not about you. This is not about you. This is not about you, Michael. This is about Joyce. You cannot let her know that you're frustrated. And so you mentioned, what'd you say? You said that you asked me about my obligations tomorrow. I told you don't worry about it. Exactly. I told you don't worry about it, because I do not want you to stack this on. Because when you're in a place of shame, if I even hint that I'm inconvenienced by it, it's almost like you're asking so that you can stack on to your shame.
Because I feel like I deserve it.
Exactly. You feel like you deserve it. Right. And I'm like, I cannot even ooze out this frustration. So it was also really challenging for me because I was just exhausted in this, and oh my gosh, I made commitments and my word is really important to me and people are depending on me to be there, and it doesn't look like we're going to make it the next day. So I communicated to the people that were relying on me to be there the following morning, said, hey, this is what happened. They were really kind about it, and I was just like, man, I gotta extend the same level of kindness to her. I was kind of fighting back. Not kind of fighting back. I was trying to fight back, not judgment per se, but it was so confusing for me to watch you shut down, to enter this world of just me. Like, it felt almost like this place of like extreme selfishness, which it wasn't per se, because you want to call the Uber, you want to do these things, but you're so consumed in me, what I feel, my shame, this, that, like, to the point that you're rendered like literally helpless lying on the couch. And I'm sitting there like, yo, if I lost keys and had other people that were depending on me to get them back, the first thing I would do is tell them, hey, don't worry about it. I'm going to find the keys. Put all of their concerns to rest. Granted, the keys are still lost and I know they're lost. Yo, I'm going to find the keys. It's okay. Go to sleep. I know you're tired. We'll be good. I'll figure it out. Don't worry about it. Hey, can I help you? No. Just get some rest. Like, for me, once again, in the same way that I was like, yo, it is not about me, Michael. Do not lose out your frustration. No. On the flip side, I've been like, yo, I don't want you to even worry about it. And so I wasn't expecting you to do that. It was just so strange for you to be like, hey, can you call the Uber? I was like, what? You want me to call the Uber? Well, here's the number. Hand over my phone, which was not the most compassionate thing that I could have done. Like, yeah, I don't know how to reach them. Okay, I'll do it. So I call, but yeah, on the flip side, basically in situations like that, it is not about me. And it's, I want to say, easy for me to just assume responsibility. Like, yo, I lost the keys. My identity is not in whether or not we have the keys. Like, yes, I recognize that somebody else is inconvenienced by that. And oh my gosh, I'm going to apologize. How can I make this up to you? I'm so sorry. It's like, I'm going to problem solve. Hey, have you let the person that you're meeting tomorrow know, just so that this doesn't reflect poorly on you? Like, let them know ahead of time. But it's about them. How can I put their concerns to rest? How can I make them feel comfortable? How can I help them get rest? All these different things. And at the end of the day, based off of where the keys were, even if I was in your shoes, we still would have missed the trip. We still would have missed getting back to Dallas on time. We still would have missed our obligations. But yeah, it was just really interesting to kind of watch. And I never thought or assumed that you weren't trying per se. And in the following days, you asked me like, hey, like, how can we be on the same page moving forward? And so I interpreted that to mean, hey, well, this is what you did. And in this situation, this is how I felt, and this is what I would have done. And boom, you were still in that place of shame, and you interpreted it like, yo, he's attacking me. Why would you just dump on everything that you would have done? You literally said, well, I'm sorry, I can't meet the Michael standard or something like that. And I'm like, whoa. There's no judgment. I thought you wanted to be on the same page. In a moment like this, this is what I would have done. This is what I was thinking based off of what happened and how we responded. This is how I felt. This is how we get on the same page. This is how we see eye to eye. But it seemed like you were still in that place of shame. And so it was just really, really, really eye-opening, I think, for both of us, honestly. Because I'm like, I'm not coming from a place of judgment. I'm not coming from a place of shame. I'm just like soaking in it. I'm like, wow, this is so different from like what I would have done. Not to say that what I would have done is the standard. That's just my natural default. So I have to like step back in a package. It's like, yo, what is what I would have done even right? Is that what I should have done? Like, I don't know. I'm not saying what you're doing is right. There's no rightness or wrongness here. I'm just trying to be on the same page. And so that was the key situation from both sides. But to summarize, it would have been about them. Not them because I messed up. Not them because... No. Like, it's about you. How do I ease your discomfort? How do I make you feel comfortable? How do I help you feel like this isn't an issue? And we're going to be okay. I'm going to communicate. What's the base word? Basically, community. But shame claws at the pillars of community. And so, yeah, I didn't recognize at the time that it was perhaps shame that was pulling you to that place. I was just so confused as to how somebody could just retreat. Like, literally just retreat and then collapse, in a sense. And then, yeah, I was trying to get sleep and you were laughing with your friend until, like, the wee hours in the morning. I'm like, how can you just laugh with your friend? Like, what? I was so baffled.
Yeah. I was definitely trying not to get sucked into that place, because also I was recognizing, hey, we're in his house. Mm-hmm. He wants to connect with me right now. Mm-hmm. And I just felt bad in general. But again, it just illustrates how baffling shame can be, because it produces the exact opposite of the results that you want. Mm-hmm. So you're saying it isolates you from community, but shame is a fear of disconnection.
Which doesn't make sense.
It doesn't make sense, but I've consistently seen that in my life where I feel ashamed, and so I almost lash out at people because I see it as misunderstanding or something. So like in the key situation, I was already kind of yelling at myself in my head. And if you in that situation had started lashing out at mm-hmm, me...
Or leaking out in any way.
Yeah, I would have gotten really angry.
Right.
Because I would be like, can't you tell I'm trying my best? Like, mm-hmm. I'm already saying things to myself that, you know, it's not helping that you're saying these things.
As if I can hear the voices in your head.
Right. But I guess what I've realized from that, though, is that I have to be cognizant of what I'm doing when I'm in that shame mindset. Because if I do shut down and I don't lift myself out of that mindset and figure out where is everybody else at, what is their perspective, then I do get sucked into this, like, it's about my shame and my insecurities, and that's a very skewed perspective. Mm-hmm. Versus if I was thinking about what you actually probably think or what my friend actually probably thought, you know, it'd be like, oh man, they're trying to help me, they're trying their best, and I want to make sure that I can help them. And, you know, it's so hard to explain, but it's like shame wants to make me do the opposite of what's actually loving and helpful mm-hmm. to create more connection. Because I think that situation could have been in some ways utilized to create more connection between us.
Oh, absolutely.
But I'm not sure if I would react differently if the same situation occurred.
I think you would. I'm confident you would. Because there is a very simple remedy in my head, based off of what we've established. Shame pulls you away from community. And then basically says like, yo, why are you not in community? Like, oh, the community views you this way. Pulls you away and makes you look at the community from an isolated, you know, leprosy type of perspective. Referencing biblical times, lepers were kicked outside of the community. And so you're looking back in. And so the remedy seems very simple to me. Number one, communication. And then B, community. Communication, so cliche. But let's take a look. We mentioned earlier that moment when we were discussing, how you said, your lack of empathy is astounding. And I told you, yo, there was a moment when you said, hey, I'm being vulnerable. You let me know. This is what I feel. This is what I am trying to do. And I immediately was like, yo, thank you. I can work with that. If in any situation or in any situation that arises moving forward, if you were to tell me, hey, this is what I am feeling, and these are the thoughts that are coming into my head right now. Dude, I would just give you a hug and be like, yo, you're doing great. You're doing your best. How can I support you? It literally is the fact that I don't know. Then shame almost says, yo, they are doing these things. He should know this. Like, I don't know your thought life. There's this expectation of me to know where you're at, but how is that ever even possible? I don't expect you to know my thoughts. How could you expect me to know yours? And of course, that makes logical sense. But once again, when you're in the place of shame, logic is, as I mentioned, it's this override of all logical thought and reason. Mm-hmm. But communication and community. Just let me know, hey, this is what I'm feeling. I'm starting to feel like less than. And post these conversations, I'll recognize, like, okay, dude, I was in this situation. I know that this is a great catalyst for shame to kick in, these little shame gremlins to rear their nasty little heads. And so then I'd be able to pick up on it and then boom, like envelop you in comfort, community, encouragement, whatever it may be. And so it's so interesting because these moments are the most powerful opportunities to create community. Like it's right there. You know, like we all recognize this. If you go through stuff with your friends, like, yo, remember that one time we went to jail together, whatever. I'm not speaking from my own personal life, just letting you know. But like the friends that you go through things with and arrive on the other side of together, those are your friends for life. Why is that? Why is that? It's because you took that opportunity, stuck together, pressed into one another, pressed into community, and arrived on the other side together. Now there's this trust. Now there's this rapport. Now there's this understanding. Now there's this awareness of what each other needs to get to the other side. That's all it takes. And so shame is the natural default for many people. because it wants to pull you away from that life. But the simple remedy in my mind is just communication. Communication. Let me know.
I just had an interesting reaction when you were talking about, hey, if you told me you were in the shame mindset and then I would like kind of wrap you in and like give you the love and the acceptance that you needed in that moment, I felt a shame gremlin go off.
Saying, why didn't you do that?
No, more so that if I did it and you did give me that love and acceptance, the shame gremlin would be saying, look at how people need to baby you because of your emotions. And yeah, that's so interesting because for one, I recognized that was the thought. And then I would feel like I didn't deserve that. And I would probably push you away.
It wouldn't push me away because that would be the thought that's firing off in your head. Whereas what I'm actually feeling, and I can speak to this with absolute certainty, is, yo, the strength that it took to press in, the awareness post our conversation, the vulnerability, the willingness to press into the shame that she's even in this moment feeling. Like, dude, I have to celebrate that. I don't want you to go through those things alone. What you mean? What? What friend would want another friend to go search for the keys by themselves? Like, what? How? I literally couldn't go to sleep if I tried, knowing that you're searching through your car or driving back to the venue or going to the coffee place that we, like, absolutely not. You thank me for coming with you. What do you mean? We're in this adventure together, yo. It's always the worst experiences that make for the best stories. So even as it's happening, I'm sitting there just thinking like, yo, this is going to make a great story one day. It's going to make for a great story one day. Still frustrating, for sure. But I don't think if this were to happen again that you would approach it the same way. I'm speaking that over your life. Yeah. I'm speaking that over your life. And another reason that I say that with the utmost clarity is because the way that you are approaching your life has already changed. A couple months ago, there was a moment when you were sitting in a team meeting and someone, I don't know, shot your idea down or something, and you ran to the bathroom crying, or you almost cried, versus I believe something like that, something similar happened in recent weeks, and there's been a huge shift in the way that you handled that, and you shared that with me. I don't know if you shared that with me in confidence. I assume so, but I don't know if that's something that you'd want to touch on or be willing to touch on here.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of what main elements, because, you know, you've touched on communication and community. I think those are more so things that I guess we both can work on. But for me, if I'm thinking about things for me that have personally helped me with shame, it would be self-awareness in order to communicate those things.
Where does that come from? People don't just have self-awareness.
I would say that the more conscious that you are of wanting self-awareness, the more that you start to see things. It's like where you focus on is what you start to see.
Right.
So recognizing, being aware, I mean, a practical thing is meditation. This is a huge thing that's helped me, of just being able to sit and be aware of the thoughts passing through your mind and not be judging those thoughts and those emotions. Just observing.
Sure. But I think we have to get a little bit deeper because those thoughts are still coming from somewhere. So it's great to be a passerby and watching them, but they're still inside my head. So how do I get to the root of those thoughts and start rewriting that?
But I mean, we have to start with that self-awareness.
Exactly.
Because that actually, because you said shame is so many layers down that it's so hard for people to even be aware that this is what's happening. So a few months ago, I wasn't aware of this voice at all. I thought it was just me. Or I thought it was other people thinking this about me. So it was a reality. When I was able to recognize it as a separate voice, and this is something my therapist taught me to do, which is to separate these voices in my mind as separate entities.
Which voices? What are the two? Help me understand the two distinct voices that you're referencing right now.
There's three main voices.
Three voices, got it.
So one is the child. This is the one that throws the temper tantrum, reacts in a way that is irrational and unreasonable. But because kids are not logical, right? They feel hurt and they react. And so that's what comes out of me when I experience a lot of these childhood wounds coming back up, a lot of these deeper traumas. So that's the child reacting. And then there's the critical voice, which is kind of berating the child, criticizing the child, asking the child, like, why are you behaving this way? You're being a spoiled brat. And all these voices that have compounded over the years, a lot of it has come from my family. A lot of it has come from within myself. that I've kind of expanded from my family's narrative. And then there's the third one, which is the mature, compassionate Joyce. And this is the Joyce that is capable, that is self-sufficient, but also kind. And so that's the one that I've tried to turn the volume up on, and the critical voice turning that down, while recognizing that all three of these voices are me, and all of them are trying to help me in some way. And so it got to a point where I recognized, wow, this critical voice, it actually is trying to help me in some way. It's trying to protect me. But the thing is, it's not helping in a good way. You know, maybe at some point when I was a child, that critical voice helped me step my game up or like do better in school or something, but it's gotten to a point where it's more harmful than it is helpful. And so I basically personified this voice and I talked to it and I said, hey, thank you so much for helping me and for keeping me alive per se. You know, you're my defense mechanism, but I don't need you anymore. That's how I kind of started turning that voice down out of gratitude, saying, hey, you're not trying to hurt me and I appreciate you, but this isn't helpful for me anymore. And then turning up that other voice that is a lot more compassionate. And so last week when I experienced feeling humiliated in the middle of a meeting with my team, that voice, the critical voice, popped up for a second because it's just what I'm used to. And it was saying like, why are you reacting this way? You're being so emotional. You're making everyone uncomfortable and you don't even know why you're upset. So that's kind of like beating me into submission a little bit. But the compassionate voice is saying, hey, no, it completely makes sense why you feel this way. You've experienced a lot and it's okay for you to be angry, to be sad, to be ashamed. Just sit for a second, allow yourself to feel what you're feeling. So I sat in that bathroom for, I don't know, probably like an hour or more. And I just felt the waves of emotion. I closed my eyes and I just focused on where I physically felt that pain manifesting. So it was a lot in my chest and in the back of my neck. And I felt them in waves. And I could sense like a thought would come up and then another wave would come. And so it was just like this awareness of what I was going through and this compassion that, hey, this is totally okay. Just take your time. The thing about compassion is that it's not just the nice guy that sits in the corner and in some ways is babying, but it goes beyond just, hey, take your time to, hey, take your time, but you do need to figure out what the root of this issue is. But there's no expectation, you know, there's no judgment. And that in itself is a whole world of difference. It's kind of just a really motherly approach of like, hey, I'm going to push you, but I'm going to be patient with you as well. And then also I started freaking out when I thought about, oh my gosh, how am I going to go outside and face my team members? They know I walked out and they probably know that I was crying in here. My normal response would just to be pretend like nothing happened and be like, oh yeah, I'm fine. Everything's good. And instead, I sat in that bathroom and that compassionate voice was like, no, like you are strong. You are brave. You're going to walk out there and you don't have to do it now. Take your time. I know you're afraid. It's okay, but you're going to stand up and you're going to walk out there and you're just going to tell them the truth. And if they ask you, hey, what happened? Where'd you go? Just, you're in control now. Just say, hey, yeah, I just got really frustrated in that meeting. But I'm okay now. And if they want to connect further, then yeah, I can talk about that. But there doesn't need to be that shame anymore of like, wow, I'm such a burden, or why do I feel this way? And because I was able to have compassion on myself, I was also able to lift myself out of that mindset and have compassion for everyone else in that room instead of having resentment. I wasn't resentful at my team lead, who I perceived to have humiliated me in the meeting. I wasn't resentful of the people in that meeting that didn't stick up for me. There was an instant where I was like, oh man, why didn't anybody? Why did he react this way? And blah, blah, blah. But then I was able to lift myself out of that and see that, wow, like I was just trying the best that I could. But because of the result of my circumstances and my experiences, I reacted this way. And it's not reasonable per se. It's not rational, but it makes sense.
Exactly.
And then I was able to then transpose that onto other people's reactions, say, man, everybody in that room was caring for me in their own different ways, and they were also trying the best that they can. I didn't think for a second that my team lead wanted to make me cry. He didn't want me to feel small, but I did. And that's no one's fault. And so I was able to walk out with just so much more compassion for myself, but also other people. And I was also very quickly able to just lift myself out of that mindset. And I walked out and pretty much went back to normal, started joking around with people, and I was pretty much over it. Whereas a few months ago, I literally was thinking about it for the rest of the day. Mm-hmm. And every time I thought about it, I would just get back into that place. And it was like I was just trying to distract myself from thinking about it, versus in this case, I dealt with it. And so it wasn't something I was trying to hide from. It was something that I had dealt with already. And when I walked out, I was able to look at my team members in the eye, whereas before, I would have avoided eye contact, you know, tried to be like, oh man, I hope they don't ask me what happened. And you know, they didn't ask me what happened, and I was totally okay with that. But I was prepared. I was prepared to look them in the eye and say, hey, this is what happened. I'm not ashamed of it. And they probably don't care either, you know? But there's a level of weirdness when you can tell somebody's upset, but they're like pretending they're fine.
Oh, for sure.
It's just like, oh yeah, everything's good. And you're like, are you sure? And like, oh yeah, I'm just tired. You know, it's fine. Because there's a level of denial on their end and you don't really want to call them out on it. And so that creates more disconnection.
Or you do if you're me.
Right. Right. And secretly, maybe they're hoping that you'll call them out on it. But that's such a roundabout way of just expressing your needs in a mature way. Just like, hey, I'm really hurt right now. I'm really frustrated. And this is why.
Boom. There's that communication piece.
Mm-hmm. So that was a very long-winded story.
No, that was perfect. And it was exactly what it was supposed to be. Did you just say it out of shame? It was long-winded. Did you feel like you spent too much time talking on that?
Yeah. I don't know if it was shame per se, because I didn't feel bad. But in general, this is something that I don't like to talk a lot about myself.
That's so... That...
Because it feels selfish. My whole role...
But you're... What? That's crazy. Like, you're telling yourself that this feels selfish, because I was listening. I was like, man, this is perfect. This is gold. This is content. We gonna be rich off of this dialogue right here.
But in my mind, I'm thinking, oh, is...
Am I talking
still,
too much?
Yeah, are people still
what?
Paying attention?
And that's so wild, because I'm like, yo, this is what it is. Like, this is what the podcast is for.
Yeah.
Like, I'm thinking, like, I literally don't know how I could follow this up, because this is such high quality. And then even after sharing a success story about how you were able to deal with and push shame to the side. Not get rid of it. You still felt it. Push it to the side.
Mm-hmm.
Keep control of it. You're like, oh yeah. Sorry, it took too long. What?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, I mean, I'm proud of my growth, but also, yeah, I'm always just like worried. I'm like...
Worried that you'll revert, per se?
No. I mean, just the talking piece. And I've noticed this a lot too, where I'll say things multiple times because I don't think they heard the first time. Because in general, I was ignored a lot as a child. And so I would have to insistently say the same thing multiple times. And then they'd be like, what'd you say? Because they just tune me out and things like that. So it's kind of transposed to when I'm adult now, where things I say, I'm like, are people even listening? Do they care? And are they zoning out right now? Because I'm just long-winded dialogue. Are they zoning out?
No. No, and I don't know if that's shame per se. Obviously,
yeah, this all ties back. Yeah, I think that's got to branch into something else.
But this all is intertwined. Like, it's, yes, you may have separated those voices, but the insecurities, there's like one primary root, like one, and I think there just has to be like one belief, like, I'm not enough.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know if we're able to dissect it down to that level, but I just feel like if you keep going down all the way, it has to be like one primary thought. So I think all of this is connected in some way, because I've called you out on this before. Like, you'll ask me a question, I'll be like, huh? And you'll repeat the question, you'll keep repeating the question.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm gaslighting in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
But I always just look at you and I'm like, how does she not know that what she said was heard? You've mentioned in team meetings, yeah, I don't like expressing my, like, speaking up. And I'm like, what? And then when we first met, it was this thing about, oh, I'm a woman. And I'm like, I don't want to say it's not because you're a woman, but like, I'm not ready to say that your voice is not heard because you're a woman in the workplace. And that may be the case, but I'm not ready just based off of like what I'm seeing in general on different podcasts, episodes. This, I've called you out, not actually giving your concrete opinion, just talking about other people's opinions. And I'm just soaking in all these things. I'm like, where does this stem from? But to get back to shame, there were a number of things that you mentioned during that beautiful golden nugget of this conversation. And the first thing was self-awareness. So in order to approach shame from Joyce's perspective, correct me if I'm wrong, you have to start with self-awareness. And then what you've done is you've separated these voices. The first one was the child in your head, the one that just responds emotionally, the one that alerts you that there's a problem. Something is said, oh, that hurt, I feel this way. Thank you so much for letting me know. Now I know. You've got an alert. That's the child's voice. Followed by the critical voice, which can be dangerous. That sounds to me like the critical one. Like, oh my gosh, I'm such a baby. Why am I hurting? Why is this alert going off? I'm so dumb. My filters are... That's the one that you're turning down. And then followed by the kind voice. So those are the three voices that you've identified within yourself. So it starts with self-awareness, then a separation of which voice is speaking and turning down the ones that are no longer useful to you and turning up the ones that are more kind. But I think the most powerful thing that you said is that all of these voices are you and they are trying to help you. And when people understand that, truly, truly understand that, you will stop judging yourself because your thoughts are going to come in. And if you still view those thoughts as like, oh my gosh, this is the devil, this is the negative, this is, oh, I'm such a negative person, you're going to attribute like a negative outcome to each of those thoughts. But if you recognize, yo, that thought was me. That thought is part of my completeness. It's part of what makes me whole. It's trying to protect me. And I'm so grateful for that. But hey, thank you so much for letting me know. But I'm going to turn you down just a little bit. I don't need you so much anymore. I think that's the most powerful thing that you said, because to me, I view that as an escape from or a way to remediate shame. No, 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 no. This is actually a good thing. There's no need to judge myself for this thought. Because if you're judging yourself for the thoughts are just going to keep coming.
Yeah. And it's more shame compounded on more shame.
Exactly, exactly. So if you view it as negative, it's just going to exponentially multiply. You can't stop it. It's a flood. It's a wave. It's a hurricane. It's a tidal wave.
Yeah.
But if you change the way that you view it and you view it as, yo, these thoughts are coming in because they're trying to alert me that there's a problem. Yeah. They're trying to tell me, hey, when you were young, yo, your mom said this, and I'm still hurting from that. They're trying to point me back to the root issue. These things are actually powerful flashlights, maps, keys to help me live a more healthy and balanced life. Yo, thank you so much. I'm so grateful that you're going that you're learning, that you're going off. So I think that's really, really powerful.
I do want to share an example that actually really helped me. But I watched this little video about meditation, and it compares this process of observing your thoughts non-judgmentally to one of those revolving sushi bars, which I'm like, yes.
Yeah, but that resonated with you 1,000%.
And so it's like watching the platters go by and that feeling of like, why would you judge the food? Like some of the food may look disgusting. You're like, I probably don't want to try that. Or some of it looks really good, but you're not like, you know, personally tied to the food.
Sure.
But so it's like capturing that sense of removal. And also, this is what I love, this feeling of curiosity. So not only are you not judging, but you're wanting to explore further. You look at the disgusting food, you're like, oh, that's interesting. What's that about? I wonder what it smells like. I wonder what it tastes like, even if it looks gross. You know, at least that's how I approach food, because I'm fairly open. And so that really resonated with me, just watching these sushi platters go by. And that's, in some sense, how we should see our thoughts.
Could see our thoughts.
Right. That we could see our thoughts that would potentially be beneficial. For me, was beneficial because I was able to observe my thoughts more and to say, like, let's be curious about why I'm thinking this way instead of, oh, I can't believe I'm thinking this way. You know, it's like such a subtle difference. And also on the self-awareness piece, it is important that it's not just these surface level thoughts that are close to the surface, but more so, what are these thoughts connected to? What is that root I think, like you mentioned, it's really important to figure out what those root, like those core beliefs are, because those are where all the thoughts are stemming from. And for me, I've already identified one of them as I'm not worthy of love, of connection. And
which is false, first and foremost. I'm going to nip that in the bud right now.
Yeah. I mean, you can say that, right?
I can say that. Right.
I can receive it in this moment.
It's just as you said. And this is a recurring theme. There is no expectation for you to get it right now. And I am not judging you if you do not get it right now. But because of what I stand for and what I believe that you are trying to stand for, will stand for, do stand for in this moment, I cannot give power or allow the opportunity to pass by without calling it out. That's not real.
Yeah. And I think it manifests in a lot of different ways. And I realized, so I've been aware of that core belief for a little bit now and realizing the way it does manifest. But a second one that came from the situation a week ago is that I still haven't really identified what the core piece is, but it's either like, I don't like to take up space, or I don't believe what I say is valuable, which is kind of what I hinted at earlier, because it makes sense when I think about that mindset going in the meeting. I was like, why was I so triggered by that experience? And it was because he asked these follow-up questions that I knew he knew the answer to, but it felt like he was just like leading me to his desired conclusion. So it made me feel stupid, essentially. And my therapist was kind of like, I wonder if it's because you have a core belief that what you say is invaluable. And so you perceived his questions as kind of like tearing you down. Instead of like, if you were objectively viewing, it's like, oh, he's just asking me questions. Let me just answer it.
Right.
But instead, it's like, because I have this core belief, and the example that she uses is the toys that kids play with, where it's like, there's like a circle shape in a box and you try to fit a circle into it. But if you try to fit a star, it's like you don't receive that as a star, you receive it as a circle. So that circle is the core belief. Hey, what I say is not valuable. So even if somebody's trying to give you a star, all you see is the circle that, oh, he probably thinks what I'm saying is not valuable. But it's like all of this is happening at such a subconscious level that in the moment, on the surface, I'm just like, oh, like he's being a dick right now because he's not valuing my opinion. But it's like, why do I think that? And all of it comes down to this fact that I make myself small in group situations. Like, I don't like to speak up. I don't like to draw attention to myself. And all of it's like stems from this core belief. And so I encourage everyone that yes, self-awareness of the thoughts, but also self-awareness of where those thoughts are coming from. Because when you address the root of that issue, it's kind of like a polluted river. It's like you can clean up the garbage, but if you don't figure out where that garbage is coming from, it's going to keep flooding. But it's going to look good for a little bit. It's going to look clean, but it's going to keep coming back unless you address that.
Yeah, and something that has stood out to me throughout this discussion is this thought that you've never arrived. You can never just be like, okay, I've isolated the core issue, we're done now. No, because as soon as, bro, these are little gremlins, bro. Like, picture them as living, active things that are just waiting. Just waiting to tear you back down again. If you put a statement, a period, like, yo, I've arrived, you're stopping yourself from continuing to process. You're closing your mind off to the possibility that, yo, some of these things could have been intertwined. And the snowball has already started rolling downhill in something else. Like, yo, maybe the shame, the core shame has been identified. But yo, being ashamed, the feeling of shame, embarrassment, all these other different things, guilt, my other, I don't know, emotions being out of alignment, out of touch with the reality. Yo, you can't just close yourself off. Like, you've got to keep digging, keep diving in. And we've never talked about this specifically, Joyce, but something that I thought of when you were talking about these core beliefs is I've noticed two different things that you've done over the course of our friendship. One of them hasn't happened in a really long time. Some of them, the other one, I don't know. There was a moment, or several moments, in the earlier stages of our friendship where you would ask me, like, why would you want to be friends with me? Like, what value do I bring And I'm sitting here like, what? Because that is an identity question. And I have gotten that from so many people in my life before. Just this, I hear it and I'm like, immediate identity question. Like, what do you mean? Why would I be friends with you? I've never asked myself that or asked somebody else that. Because even if, like, they're on some whatever crazy level that, you know, like, what? Like, I view myself as valuable. I view my time as valuable. So I've never even felt the need to ask somebody, like, why would you be friends with me? But I've noticed you used to, and you haven't asked in months and months and months, which is awesome. Like, why would you be friends with me? Like, what do I bring? And to me, it was this automatic indicator that you didn't view yourself as valuable or comparatively as valuable as me. And I'm like, dude, that's a lie. What? Like, we're just friends. It's not a matter of who is providing insight for who, like, we're just friends. And then the second thing is this concept of time. I cannot, or maybe I can now, but in my mind, I locked off the discussion of time with you, because if I in any way hinted that was not a good use of my time or my time should have been invested elsewhere, it was going to be interpreted as I, Joyce, am not a good use of his time. I am not valuable. Conversation with me is not a good use of time for him. And so just this concept of time is always kind of a shaky topic for us. And I tend to just avoid it. But I think it stems from this, like, this value proposition.
Taking up space.
Taking up space. Mm-hmm. Taking up time. And you would fire back at me. I would just jokingly mention time in some capacity. And you'd be like, well, that's your fault for using it. That's your fault for talking to me. That's your fault for spending this. And I'm like, yo. And it felt as though you were almost defending yourself or trying to prove to yourself, mm-hmm. no, my time is valuable. You spent your time with me. Therefore, it was your decision. It's not my fault. And I'm like, yo, it's fine. Like, it's fine. That being said, spending 4 hours when we're in a frenzy, a mental frenzy, emotional place, shame, river, pulling us down current, that in general is not a good use of time because mm-hmm. we can address mm-hmm. these things when we're both calm and rational.
Yeah.
But those are two different ways or places that I've noticed that belief system manifests. And I didn't even think about it till just now.
Yeah, I don't, the time one, I don't actually remember that being a huge trigger for me, but I did remember feeling more so guilty about that one. Or maybe there was shame wrapped in there. And that's why I would always apologize mm-hmm. and say, like, hey, sorry for taking so much time.
Right, right. I'm like, what? What do you mean?
Yeah.
And that's super interesting because even if I allude to it and joke about it, mm-hmm. yo, like, I am responsible for myself. I'm not viewing you as the one who, like, stole time from me. Mm-hmm. That's why I joke about it, because the concept is so ridiculous. Like, mm-hmm. you stealing time, you cannot steal my time.
Right.
And so I joke about it because I'm like, this is so ridiculous. Uh-huh. And then you jump into it and you're like, yeah, I could never steal your time. You're like, defending yourself. And I'm like, of course. You know how now I'll respond like, of course.
But I think I'm pretty sure I was joking back.
You may have been. You may have been.
But this was all over text. So again,
right,
it
once
was
again,
a lot of that interpretation.
Y'all, talk to people face to face. But yeah, and we can disseminate some of this later. Those are two things that I've noticed at different points in our friendship. Both of them, several months ago, I would say. But it's really interesting because even this conversation can show you that, like, yo, even as you unpackage and recognize the root causes, there are different ways that it'll manifest. And I don't know if this is the first time you've heard it from another life, but...
Yeah. It makes me feel better, for sure, because I see all of these surface symptoms that are disconnected, and I'm like, why am I reacting this way? This doesn't make sense. And then when you really kind of break these things down, you're like, oh.
It makes perfect sense.
It makes perfect sense, even if I don't understand.
And... it's okay. It's okay.
Yeah.
And it's okay.
The main piece is, how do we tell this to ourselves? Because you telling it to me, like, that's cool. But if I don't believe it, then you can say anything and I'll still think it's not okay. You know?
Right. This goes back to one of the very first things I told you. I basically told you that life had meaning and purpose. I can't remember what it was. And you're valuable. And I said, it's not true because I'm saying it. It's just nice to be reminded. And I don't think you interpreted that really well. The first time, I think you interpreted that as, like, arrogance. Mm-hmm. Like, who does he think he is to be telling me that my life has purpose and I'm valuable? And this is, it just goes back to like that, like just this shame narrative. Like, if you don't believe that your life is valuable and has purpose, me saying it is like trying to fit a triangle in that circle hole.
Yeah.
But I'm still going to say it. I'm still going to walk boldly. I'm still going to live a life that is full of light and exuberance, because how could I cater to everyone's hurt and shame narratives? If anything, like, we have to show people that there is a different existence that's possible. If we walk around in the same pit as everyone else, then everyone's in the same pit. Who's going to help raise those who are down there out? That's my take. Or excuse, however you want to view it. However you want to view it.
Yeah.
But I think practical tips or exercises for people.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that it sounds so cliche, but like affirmations.
Affirmations, 1000%.
It's rewriting the narrative of who you tell yourself that you are.
Right, right, right.
And the only thing I would caution against this is because for months I tried affirmations. I would listen to some 40-minute track every morning. At the end of it, it didn't do anything because there was some internal resistance. It just always constantly felt like I was trying to convince myself of something.
You are trying to convince yourself of something.
That I'm like, oh, I am worthy. You know, I am like important or whatever it is, right? But when you can get to that point where that switch flips and you recognize, oh, this isn't something I'm trying to convince myself of. I actually believe this about myself. And it shows, like, I don't even know how to help somebody get to that place. But I think part of it is, you know, figuring out those different voices that are in your head. So it's like, as soon as you hear, oh, I am worthy, is there a voice that jumps in and says, oh, but only sometimes, or only if you do this? Really, really being aware of those things and of your emotions. And so there is a way to do affirmations wrong, I would say. Because if you just blindly repeat things, and it's not a magic spell.
It has to be conscious. Dang. So, I got several thoughts. And I think we're winding down, getting to the end of our time here. But, okay, so first of all, where I'm at currently, my thought process is that your beliefs follow action. Sometimes it is the case that we already have a healthy belief that's been ingrained. But if we're trying to rewrite a narrative, your belief follows the action. Think about this. If right now I were to send you to the front lines of a warplane, Turkey versus the Kurds right now, that's what's happening in our world today. There are guys who are fighting that battle right now. Do you think they feel brave? They obviously don't feel brave. Bro, like, somebody is shooting at you with tanks, rockets, you don't feel brave. I'm sure there are several individuals, just a couple of them, who go to the front lines and feel brave. Sure, whatever. I would postulate that the majority of people don't feel brave. But when I look back and see, yo, I stepped out to the front lines and I did it despite feeling scared, I'm teaching myself that I am capable of bravery. But if I went off of, oh, I don't feel brave, I would never have even put myself in a position to prove to myself that I'm capable of being brave. Then I think about it like, pick up, I don't know, any sport. If I believe that I am bad at the sport, then yo, my brain is in control of my body. So my body is not going to be unlocked. I'm not going to allow my body to give 100% because I believe that I'm bad at it. So then I'm going to get bad results, and the bad results prove to myself, see, I was bad in the first place. I never could have been good. Mm-hmm. And it's this reinforcing cycle. But if I approach it and I say, yo, like, I'm capable of being good. I actually can do it. I am capable of getting better. Then I'm unlocking my mind, which is then unlocking my body to actually give my maximum effort. And then I start growing and I realize, like, yo, I actually am freaking capable of doing this. I am capable of growing. And it's this reinforcing cycle. That's one way to look at, one way to look at it. But I also think of it like a jar of water. People are so quick to make assumptions. And you know how I feel about assumptions. Oh, can't stand them. People will be like, oh, it wasn't working. You pulled the trigger on that way too quickly. Picture like a vase of water, jar of water, jug of water, however you want to picture it. Picture pouring in, it's 1 gallon, or maybe even we'll go 2 gallons. 2 gallons, jug of water, and we pour red dye in it. 17 ounces of red dye. Super, super diluted. We're going to view this red dye, this red water, as unhealthy thoughts. One affirmation comes in. One affirmation is like teeniest, it's just one drop of healthy water. So this is clear water that I'm now pouring in. So for every positive affirmation that I put in, one drop of the red stuff has to go out. It has to. So it's at maximum capacity. So it's going to spill out. So for every healthy thought that I put in is that's one drop of water, one drop of clear, crystal clear water that goes in and one gets pushed out. One affirmation is one drop. Two affirmations is two drops. 100 affirmations is 100 drops. But in a 2-gallon jar, it's already been filled with red dyed water, it's not going to feel like it's making that much of a difference. But the thing is, as you pour in more, a point comes where you just pour in 4 ounces, 5 ounces, 6 ounces, 10 ounces, 16 ounces, quart, and it slowly, slowly becomes more and more diluted. That potency of the red dye, it starts leaving and it's replaced. And a point comes where it's all just clear thoughts. So people are jumping the gun and they're saying, oh my gosh, it wasn't working. I didn't. You did affirmations for 3 days. You're 27 years old. How many days is that? 365 days times 27? Okay, I'll cut you a break because you probably weren't having these negative thoughts when you were 1, 2, 3, 4, but maybe you were an unhealthy family and these things were being programmed into you from all that time. So 365 times 24 years? Yo, that's a really, really, really potent jar, jug, vase of red dye. 3 days of affirmations is not going to do it. But if you keep pouring in, if you keep telling yourself, a point is going to come where you start to believe it, when it starts to tip. You don't have to get the full 2-gallon jug to be completely clear. You just have to get it past halfway, one drop past halfway, because now the balance is actually in the healthy camp, not the unhealthy camp. So that's a way to visualize it, but I just would caution everyone against making these assumptions. Oh yeah, it doesn't work. No, it does work. It does work.
I do think you have to definitely create more intentionality in it, because I do think that people can do affirmations forever and it doesn't work.
Right, which is why when you said that, I said conscious.
Right.
I read a book called The Talent Code. This must have been maybe 2 years ago. And basically what they did is they explored, it's hard to even describe, basically places in the world that were putting out or creating extremely high quality athletes. So they checked out Brazil for soccer, because Brazil, this is a third world country. They don't have the money of the United States, but why is it that every single year they're putting out the highest number of professional soccer athletes? Like, what is going on in Brazil? They would explore, I think it was someplace in Russia, tennis facility, where like 4 of the last 5 world champions, to make arbitrary numbers, were created. And it's this tiny little training facility. It's not even nice. They don't have millions of dollars. It's literally just a hole-in-the-wall place. So what is it about these places? And it explores, what is talent in the brain? Like, what are these people doing? And so it broke down basically the recipe for talent. Like, how do you create a talented person? And one of the biggest components was conscious practice. Like, not just doing it. It wasn't the repetition. It was, I did it, consciously aware of this is what was off, and consciously changing that. And that's why I said, gave you the word conscious. Yes, we can rote memorization. I am great. I am powerful. I am brave. I am fearless. I'm incredible. All these things. But like, there has to be a conscious attachment to these words. Like, be present. But I think if you are conscious, you can absolutely rewrite the narrative.
Yeah. And I think more of a practical piece too, is that if you do affirmations, it's probably better to create your own than to go off a script off of some YouTube video, mm-hmm, you know? Mm-hmm. It's like things that you are striving towards, the person that you want to be. And so realizing for me, it was a clicking moment, or it was a kind of insight moment when I realized that, oh, this is the person that I want to be. This is my future self, but also this is already the person that I am in my present, and kind of shifting my filter to see that I've always been this. And so kind of what you're touching on, Michael, about the belief has to come first, because...
I don't think the belief has to come first.
That's what we were talking
about. Well, it's... yeah, okay.
It's like you have to believe it, because it's all about how you interpret your actions. It's about that filter, because you can interpret the action as one thing, but I've asked people, I'm like, why do you think you're lazy? And they'll just be like, oh, well, I'm just not using like my time well. And it's like, oh, well, was there a point where you weren't acting like that? They're like, oh yeah, there was a time where I was super disciplined. And so it's like your actions change, but if your belief is I'm lazy, then it doesn't matter what you do. You'll always perceive yourself as lazy. And so realizing that you have to connect past, present, and future, and recognize that there were points where you were bold. Even though you may walk into a conference room now and not say a single thing during a meeting, if you believe that you're bold, then you don't have to prove anything to anyone. and say, oh yeah, well, I have to be bold, so I like had to speak up in order to be bold. It's like, no, I'm bold, but today I just didn't feel like speaking up.
Sure.
So your identity isn't tied to these actions to prove anything because you know who you are.
So I apologize. Yes, what I said, you absolutely tied perfectly back into what I more so meant was at the start, you don't feel bold. Like you may not have the belief like I am bold, I am brave, I am good at basketball. More so what I start with is permission to allow for the possibility that I could. Like I believe that I could be good at basketball. Or even if I don't have that belief, what happens is if I tell myself, yo, I'm going to give my best, I'm going to give my best, I'm going to give my best, I'm going to try. Eventually, those affirmations are replaced with belief. Even if I don't feel, that's the difference, feeling versus belief. Even if I don't feel that I'm amazing at basketball, I'm going to tell myself, I'm incredible. I'm incredible. I can be D1. I can be D1. I'm incredible. I'm incredible. And what I'm doing is basically like, in a sense, faking, but like allowing myself to release the mental restraints that I have on my body and my mind. And then I give my best, and then my best shows, oh my gosh, I grew. And then that initial affirmation is replaced with the belief. But it didn't start necessarily with the belief. It started with the affirmation. The affirmation is the jump start, the ignition, because many of us don't believe that we're anything and we're not valuable and people don't want to, like, if you start with belief, our whole society would collapse. Literally,
well, it's not realistic.
It's not realistic, yeah.
Right.
So
I guess,
start with affirmations, yeah. And then that will eventually create the belief.
I guess what I meant by affirmation is setting an intention of like who you want to be.
Yeah, absolutely.
Versus just kind of this reactive approach of like, oh, just drifting, you know, reacting to things. But affirmation is realizing this is the person I want to be regardless of the circumstance. Like, I want to be kind. I want to view people equally. If that's what you want, then strive for that. Instead of like, oh, I feel like a bad person because they think I'm a bad person. And, you know, it's like,
you don't know what they think, bro.
Right. And at the end of the day, it's like, those are your own voices. Those are the gremlins.
Right.
But I've seen it so many times of like, some girls like, oh yeah, like, I feel like I should donate money because I heard this girl talking about me not donating money to this event. And so I was like, oh, so it's not because you want to donate money, but it's because you don't want to seem like a bad person to everyone else.
And that's a whole different topic in my head because...
But I'm like, who do you want to be?
Yeah.
You know, like it's kind of taking that back of like, who cares what other people think?
For
but
sure.
So many people get locked into that of like, oh, but I feel bad. Why do you feel bad? Just do what you want to do, like who you want to be. Does that make sense?
It does. It does. I think we have come to a pretty good stopping point, but yeah. Heavy topic. Or maybe not. So that's the thing. It's not even a heavy topic, in my opinion. Like, yo, shame. Normal. Like, this is a feeling that everybody, not everybody, many people feel. And it's fine. And there is no expectation for you to not feel that way. There's no judgment for you if you do feel that way.
I think it's a heavy topic just because I
think it can be for some people.
Yeah, because, yeah, I was definitely dreading it because it's just a lot to unpack and to express clearly of like, yo, this is what's happening. And so maybe it's like that pressure. But in general, it's like people feel shame about shame, you know?
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. There's no need to.
Right, there's no need to.
There's no expectation for you to, even when we're about to jump in this closet and start recording, you're like, oh, I'm stressed out. I'm like, why? Oh, this and the other and this. Blah. What? There's no expectation for you to speak a certain way. Dude, I've been stumbling over my words
the entire time.
Just like, blah, 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 mumble.
But also, yes, it's not a big, I mean, I don't want to say it's not a big deal because the reason I'm saying this is because to a lot of people, this does hold a lot of weight in their lives.
1,000%.
And to just affirm that, you know, it's like all of your struggles, all these things that didn't make sense to you. It's like they do make sense.
Mm-hmm. They do. We agree with that.
And they're valid. And so it's okay to start observing and digging into those things with compassion for yourself. They are important things. So just for people who are maybe filtering that out as like, oh, yeah, this isn't a big deal. Like, it is a big deal.
Interesting. And I think even that mindset would be based out of shame per se. What I'm actually saying is you have the power. You have the strength. You're bold. You're brave. This is not out of your control. It's not out of your capacity. It's not out of your capabilities. So I will not tell you it is heavy because I don't want to anchor you to the fact that it's heavy. It actually just takes a little pressing into, and you can lift it, and I'm confident that you will. That's what I'm actually saying.
Yeah.
That's why I say it like that. It's really interesting.
Yeah. And I think it is interesting because I think you need both sides of the coin just validate. There's both sides of like...
Oh, 1,000%.
Normalizing and saying, hey, you know, you do have the power. But also my side is acknowledging that you've gone through a lot.
You have, yeah.
And it has been a huge weight on your life. And that's okay. And it's okay to start like reconciling and reckoning with those pieces. But it's like, we see the struggle, right? Like for me, I've experienced that struggle. So I know how hard it is. So definitely my perspective is one of more emotional empathy. Hey, I've been there. It's hard and it's a process. But I guess from your perspective, it's more so like, hey, you can come out of this. Don't stay there.
My perspective is a lot more logical or compassionate empathy. So rather than focusing on the feeling of it, focusing on the, hey, this is how we problem solve. And I think that'll be a great topic to address next time. But if you made it this far, you're incredible. We love you. So grateful that you're here. And I guess one last time, I'm Michael.
I'm Joyce.
And this is a Gratitude Collision.